I do have to start this meeting out with saying we had the youth and government kids the other day here in our legislator meeting. They're all on now. But I did say everybody wanted to be here for public safety because it was the best committee. And yeah. I was picking on them because of myself being up here. But now they get to see, look at the guards that I have over my meeting. So I just had to say that to joke. Thank you, everyone, for coming this morning. Do we have approval of the minutes from February 3rd and February 24th?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any questions, any changes? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 All right. We'll start with the sheriff.
Good morning.
Morning.
We're going to start today with some commendations. These are from December, January, and February. And you see all these folks back here. They're the ones that are out there in the communities making the difference. So it's nice to be able to recognize them every now and again, especially when they do such phenomenal work. So could we have Deputy Andrews come forward? And Deputy Bush, too. Deputy Owen is part of this also, but he was unable to make it due to a family issue today. And as I told him, family comes first, right? Yes, sir. All right. On December 13th, this is Deputy Ryan Andrews, Deputy Bryce Bush. On December 13th, 2024, Deputy Andrews and Deputy Brandon Owen responded to a report of a cardiac arrest of a 36-year-old male in the town of Woodhull. Deputy Andrews assessed the patient, had no pulse, and began CPR. Deputy Owen began rescue breathing and assisted in chest compressions. Woodhull Ambulance and AMR arrived on scene, as well as Deputy Robinson and Deputy Bush. Deputies continued CPR for 50 minutes. That's 50 minutes, at which time the patient then regained a pulse and was transported to a local medical facility. Although the patient did not survive the night, the teamwork and life-saving actions of Deputy Andrews, Deputy Owens, Deputies Robinson and Bush. Sorry, Jeff, you're supposed to be up here too. Why don't you come on up? We're exemplary and beyond normal expectations. These deputies went the extra mile to save a life. I, Sheriff James L. Allard, do hereby commend Deputy Sheriff Ryan Andrews, Deputy Sheriff Brandon Owen, Deputy Sheriff Bryce Bush, and Deputy Sheriff Jeff Robinson for their professionalism, leadership, and service. Not only did you display life-saving skills in medical assessment and treatment, but you all showed an unwillingness to give up on your patient. Thank you for your professionalism, integrity, leadership, and service. March 3rd, 2025, Sheriff James Allard. These will be in your file when you get back, okay?
Thank you very much, guys.
Shake your hand.
Great job.
You're going to see Deputy Robinson again here in a minute. If you recall, we commended Deputy Robinson a few months ago for saving the life of a patient that had cut themselves and probably would not have lived until the ambulance arrived had he not applied the tourniquet as quickly as he did. Saved two people that had tried to commit suicide. So Deputy Robinson is doing very well since we were able to steal him from the Corning City Fire Department. Okay, January 10th. Guess what, Jeff? You're back up, buddy. Come on up. And Deputy Brent Najati, who said, I didn't do anything special, I don't want to be there, is also named in this. So Jeff's a pretty shy guy, and he doesn't like to be having the spotlight on him. So I know he's not comfortable right now, which I kind of dig. So that's good. On January 10th, 2025, Deputy Brent Najati and Deputy Jeff Robinson responded to a medical call in the village of Bath. Brandon, do you want to bring everybody up now? Except for that Von Beveren.
Thanks, sir.
Yes. So this is the effect that we have now of having a county-wide EMS. is that our deputies get to work with the county EMS providers. And this is a successful conclusion. So I will tell you that Deputy Robinson began CPR and stayed with the patient in the ambulance with our folks all the way to the hospital. And we had a successful conclusion. I'll let Brandon give you the particulars because he uses the nice words.
Thank you. Shortly before midnight on Thursday, January 9th, EMS was dispatched for a Delta level call for an unresponsive patient in the village of Bath. The call was subsequently upgraded to a cardiac arrest as CPR instructions were being given. It was a tiered response from Bath Police, Dauphin County Sheriff's Department, Bath Ambulance, and our county level ALS unit were all called. All parties began working without hesitation. An AED was applied and three shocks in total were delivered prior to our ALS arrival. Patient was subsequently given advanced life support interventions and kind of went in and out of cardiac arrest during the short transport to Ira Davenport. He arrived at Ira Davenport with a pulse and spontaneously breathing. He was subsequently put on an aircraft and airlifted to Arna Ogden's ICU. We've tried to do our best to keep up with this gentleman's progress. We were unable to get a hold of him to actually physically come here, but he's making good progress, walked out on his own, neurologically intact, has had a couple admissions for maybe pneumonia or similar type things, but making a great recovery. And again, a testament to a tiered response and good interagency cooperation. We have a gentleman in his 70s who's still alive today. Thank you.
And to continue on, even though Deputy Najati doesn't want anything said, while Deputy Robinson and the EMS folks were working on the patient, Deputy Najati started moving furniture, clearing a path for the transport, and then actually gave the person's spouse a ride to the hospital so that she could be with him. Incredibly distraught, he de-escalated her, got her to the hospital so that she could be with her husband, the patient. And for that, he says, "I did nothing special." And that's just the kind of guy he is. So I commend Sheriff, Deputy Sheriff Jeff Robinson and Deputy Sheriff Brent Najati for their professionalism, leadership, and service. Not only did you display life-saving skills, she also showed empathy and compassion to the family of the patient. Thank you for your professionalism, integrity, leadership, and service. So Mike Von Beveren, I've known for many, many years. I know something special happened when he calls me the day after a call and says, "Sheriff, I got to tell you what you guys did." And this was one of those times where he called me and said, "You got to know what Robinson and Najati did." So thank you, Mike, for that.
Thank you.
All right. Yep. Thank you. We have Sergeant Scotty and Sergeant Kester here. Excellent. You don't have to hold hands. You can come up together, though. So Sergeant Scotty and Sergeant Kester are both sergeants in the jail. And Sergeant Scotty is in charge of the CERT team. And Sergeant Kester for years has worked on our EMS, CPR instructor, et cetera, et cetera. On January 15th, 2025, Corrections Sergeant Angelo Scotty was working in the booking area of the Spence County Jail. Sergeant Scotty heard a noise from a booking cell and observed a recently incarcerated person with blood on his face. Sergeant Scotty called for emergency medical assistance. Corrections Sergeant Chris Kester responded and assisted Sergeant Scotty. Both sergeants entered the cell and observed the inmate had tied a portion of his shirt around his neck, used a prescribed cane to twist it and cause his own asphyxiation. Both sergeants worked together to remove the cane, remove the shirt, and then performed emergency medical treatment to the inmate, successfully foiling the suicide attempt. Once again, their actions saved a life not only in the jail, but in Steuben County. I, Sheriff James Allard, do hereby commend Corrections Sergeant Angelo Scotty and Corrections Sergeant Chris Kester for their professionalism, leadership, and service. Not only did you display excellent attention to detail, but quickly and efficiently stopped the suicide attempt, thus saving the life of an inmate. Thank you for your professionalism, integrity, leadership, and service. March 3rd, 2025. Deputy Schaefer. Thank you. This is Deputy Schaefer, everybody. She came to us from Canandaigua PD, is where we were able to lure her away from. On February 4th, 2025, Deputy Sheena Schaefer responded to the Arkport School District in response to an anonymous tip of violence threatened against staff members. According to Superintendent Harper, Deputy Schaefer, and this is a quote, responded to the situation with the utmost care, treating it with the seriousness it deserved while also providing much needed reassurance to our staff. Her ability to balance professionalism with genuine empathy went a long way in comforting our employees and reinforcing their sense of safety. Superintendent Harper further stated that he is grateful for the outstanding service and partnership between the Sheriff's Office and their school district. On February 6th, 2 days later, Deputy Schaefer responded to a domestic incident in which it was reported that an 11-year-old female was out of control. Deputy Schaefer responded, established a rapport with the child, de-escalated the situation, during which the child disclosed acts by an estranged parent, which led to a child protective investigation and further family court actions. The child's guardian, her grandmother, was so impressed by Deputy Schaefer's ability to communicate and successfully bond with her granddaughter, she called my administrative line to demand that Deputy Schaefer be recognized. And she was pretty strong in her demand. So I, Sheriff Haller, do hereby commend Deputy Sheriff Sheena Schaefer for her professionalism, leadership, and service. Not only do you display care, empathy, and understanding of dynamic situations, but you problem solve and serve your community in an exemplary fashion. Thank you for your professionalism, integrity, leadership, and service. It's interesting to me as I do these, same names come back over and over again. Deputy Robinson, Deputy Bush, Deputy Schaefer, they all do such great work. Tommy Nybeck's got to come up yet, and I'm not seeing that one. I must have passed over it. Here, da, da, da. I've got one more. What was the date on that, Chris? Because I don't have this one in my pot, in my packet. When he came in with the broken tablet. That's Deputy Nybeck and Deputy Bush again. Okay. Come on up, Deputy Bush. So two or three Sundays ago, I don't have this one in my packet. There was an instance in the jail where an inmate took one of the tablets, broke it, and was using a piece of glass from the face of it to threaten to kill himself. And he was in his cell refusing to come out and threatening self-harm. Deputy Nybeck and Deputy Bush heard the call go out and without being dispatched responded anyways and went in and assisted Sergeant Kester in the jail. And because of their previous relationship and with the particular inmate and because of Deputy Nybeck's outstanding de-escalation skills, they were able to talk him down, get the piece of glass away from him, and get him into treatment that he needed in order to not do those things again. Deputy Nybeck, for those that know him, has an outstanding method of communicating with people. And he did that then. And he uses his former abilities from being a correction officer before a deputy to be able to relate to the inmates. So we're incredibly lucky to have him. Deputy Bush assisted. You're always the assisting guy. I love it. But how amazing is it that without being dispatched, they see the need, they respond to the need, and they deliver exemplary service to our county. So both Sergeant Kester and I think it was Sergeant Scotty sent the email on this to me. Basically, if he hadn't done what he did, the correction cert team would have had to been called. They would have had to crash the cell. They would have had to physically take that person out and remove the piece of glass from his hand without injury to themselves or him. By their ability to connect and de-escalate, none of that was necessary. And they were in the process of activating the cert team at the time when the deputies responded. So thank you. You hereby commend Deputy Tom Nybeck and Deputy Bryce Bush for your professionalism, leadership, and service. Not only did you respond when without being called, but showed your ability to de-escalate, communicate, and avoid a life-threatening situation. Thank you for your professionalism, integrity, leadership, and service. That's all the commendations for this month, and that's enough.
I just want to say thank you for all the service that you guys do. There's so many of those things that the community doesn't see, and it's great that we get to hear those. And I know it's only a select few because you guys do it every day, but I just want to say thank you from all of us.
Great job, guys. If you've got all your photos. Yep, can we do that? Then those guys can get on to their business. Perfect. Thank you. My first other item is accept a donation of the boat slip from the Boathouse Cuca. In the past, the folks that owned the marina near Hammondsport gave us a boat slip without charging. This year, they want to do it as a donation. So I'm looking to accept a donation of $2,310 for a covered boat slip rental donation from the Boathouse Cuca.
Motion, Potter.
Right. That's where our patrol boat sits all summer.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Perfect. All right. The 2024 State Criminal Alien Assistant Program grant. This is in the jail. It's a grant of $6,148. Looking to receive that.
I'll move it.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Potter.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any questions?
Yeah. What exactly is this for, Sheriff?
This has to do with any holding we do of folks that are wanted through ICE or through any other criminal alien program through the federal government.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, we have a question.
We're working with ICE then if we have...
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Where we legally can.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're partnering with our federal law enforcement partners, yes.
You already voted.
And I actually had a good conversation with the county attorney on that. And I believe we're on the same sheet of music. Mm-hmm. Yep. Did you do your vote?
Yeah, we already did.
Okay. The next one is the 2024 Bulletproof Vest Grant. And the grant itself, we have to match it 50%. So the grant is in the amount of $10,528.18. And the budget would increase to $21,056.36 because it's a matching.
I'll move it.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Toby.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any questions? Go ahead.
The funds to match that are budgeted?
Yes.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries.
All right. Then we have award the uniform bid. I have a one sheet from Andy, and I'm not sure who it's to. Ranger Outfitters. Okay. I have Ranger Outfitters for some of it, UVT for some of it. Andy did all this, and we weren't necessarily involved. So,
you have a cost because this doesn't have a hyperlink on that.
I have a one page from Rangers. Tie is $8.99. Trousers are $56.99. Women's trousers are $56.99. Short sleeve shirts are $60. Long sleeve shirts are $64. Sweaters are $102. Jackets are $129. Hats $127. Traffic safety vest is $40. Boots are $124. Badge is $116. That's all I have from.
So we don't have an extended amount of the total award.
It's becoming very, very difficult to do these awards with the uniforms because a lot of people are getting out of them.
Just looking at the budget, we budget about $22,000.
Okay.
So it's based on need.
That helps.
It would look like the only bidder was Ranger Outfitters at 261 Baker Street. That's the only one on the thing I have from Andy.
And Andy is here if there's a question. I mean, we can.
Sheriff, you just said Ranger Outfitters from where?
261 Baker Street, so Corning, New York. Okay. Yes. Right.
Marola's.
Yes.
All right.
Yep. Chris's place. Yep.
That's even better that they're local.
That's what we kind of like that.
All right. No other questions?
Andy, do you have anything to offer? That's about it.
I think Scott, you made a motion, didn't you, Scott? Mm-hmm. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All righty. We are rolling. Authorization to issue a bid for the drones. And Andy's going to do the bid.
So, Sheriff, this is just to put it out the bid, right?
Yes. Okay.
Are these the drones that the $600,000 federal award?
Part of them, yeah. Or part of that award, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll move it.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Excellent. Next one is approving a contract with Nationwide Power for network critical power equipment. This is the uninterruptible batteries for when the power goes out, the UPS batteries that come in to sustain all the functions across the jail.
Is that the same company, Sheriff, you've used for a long time?
I don't know. Hey, Andy, is that the same company we currently use or a different one? The batteries, the Nationwide Power. We want to be able to put that out for bid. He wanted to know if that's the same company.
We're approving the contract with Nationwide Power for the network critical power equipment. Just wondering if that's the same company we've been using.
Yes. Is that the same company we use for UPSs? Okay. Yeah, I don't have the answer to that either.
Yeah, I mean, Jack's looking it up right now, but that really doesn't matter if they're the lowest bid. I mean, it's okay.
They're from Henderson, Nevada.
Do we have a motion to approve the contract?
I'll move it.
Right. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries.
And just, I forgot to say, but the looks like it's in the amount of $5,208.57 as a point of reference. All righty. And approved contract renewal with Axon. Excuse me. Contract renewal with Axon. It is from January 1 of this year to January 1 of next year. And it is in the amount of $30,870.84. And this is all of the data storage, et cetera, and maintenance, not only for, it's for the all the new car cameras that are going in.
I'll move it.
All right. We have
a second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any questions on the Axon contract? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Cool. Thank you. Now we're ready. The chair, with your approval, Mr. Horton.
Yes.
The chair asked me to do a quick overview of the Sheriff's Institute wellness program that I'm involved in. So I got a real quick PowerPoint, if you're okay with it. You're going to hurt your necks. All right. So about, to give you a brief overview, about a year and a half ago, I became the vice chair of the Sheriff's Institute, State Sheriff's Institute. And we own, the Institute owns, a summer camp on Cuca Lake that's only used 6 weeks a year. And it's awesome. It's incredible what it does. We send a dozen to 15 kids there for free every year. And it's great for kids that wouldn't have a vacation otherwise. And it's on Cuca Lake. It's on the bluff, just down from Cuca College. With everything that's going on in law enforcement, especially on the corrections side right now, I began a discussion with other sheriffs of as to when we have 1,000 foot of frontage and 32 acres of woodland on the bluff on Cuca Lake, why are we only using this 6 weeks a year? And why don't we start moving towards creating a wellness center for first responders, not just police and corrections, but also EMS, fire, dispatchers, everybody across the board? And why don't we create a sustainable fund to be able to provide that programming and a place to do it? That took off. And right now, the Institute has contracted with a fundraising company that is in the middle of a $14 million campaign to build a wellness center, a residence, and have a sustainable wellness program for first responders at that location. So this is a presentation I did last November to the New York State Chiefs, and we're calling it the Ron Spike Summer Camp and Wellness Center. If, as many of you remember, Yates County Sheriff Ron Spike was sheriff for 32 years and was instrumental in establishing that camp and making sure that it stayed. So we felt it was incumbent to name it after him. But most agencies have a wellness program. We have a great wellness program. We have peer support counselors. We reach out to mental health, and we've used EMDR, which is eye movement distraction remediation, in order to treat PTSD. And it's been very, very successful. I can tell you that our folks that have been in incredibly traumatic situations have benefited from it. So most agencies do a good job with their wellness program, but there's no statewide definition of what a wellness program should be, nor is there a kind of gold standard for wellness programs across the state. And there's no place in the Northeast where an officer can go and stay on site and receive treatment. So that's what we're looking at building. So the Institute owns and operates a summer camp, as I told you. For 6 weeks each summer, our goal is to use that space the other 10 months as a first responder wellness retreat and training center. And fundraising is currently going on for the establishment of a state-of-the-art assembly hall and residential quarters to support that goal. So the fundraising, as I said, is through the Sheriff's Institute. I'm currently the vice chair of the Institute, and I'm the chair of the wellness training group, which involves those of you that went to the New York State Association of Counties last week. You probably saw Sheriff Figueroa in public safety. It was his birthday. I think they sang happy birthday to him. He is the co-chair for the wellness training group. He is the sheriff of Ulster County. He actually has a division to peer support and training, and they provide peer support to the entire county, all first responders in that county. He has two deputies and a lieutenant, that's all they do. If you look at Rochester, if you look at Monroe County, they have a psychologist, a sergeant, and several deputies. They're part of their wellness program. So it varies from county to county and from especially police department to police departments. That's where we really see a lack of wellness programs is in the police departments. So we're looking to our goal is $14 million, and we have several large donors that are already involved in it. We're currently in the quiet phase of fundraising, large donors, bequeathments, et cetera. And soon we'll move to the active fundraising, which will include groups, individuals, and all of those folks to get us over the top. Next Monday, just a quick plug, Ricalto's Restaurants hosting a fundraiser in my name, specific for the Wellness Center.
That's in Hornell, right here.
Yes. Yeah, it used to be the Club 57. Now it's Ricalto's. In addition to the Wellness Center, we're building a Hero's Cottage to provide dorm-style housing for those in treatment, as well as the deputies who stay as counselors during the camp season. So, for instance, when Trooper Clark got murdered here in our county and Sergeant Day was involved in that, we could have, when this is up and running, we could send him and his wife to that for 3 days, free of charge, and get counseling, treatment, and what to look out for, unplugged at Cuca Lake, and then bring him back. And that's what our goal is, but it's for all first responders. So your community members will be receiving communications requesting funding to achieve this goal. We've teamed up with the Mental Health Association of New York. That's Mahaney's. We're trying to standardize, bring all the different trainings from all the different disciplines under one umbrella and create what ALERT is to school shooting training. We want to create a program. We're calling it the HERO program. For first responder wellness. So we're already having monthly meetings with Mahaney's, DCGS, New York State Chiefs of Police Association, the Bureau of EMS, FADSNY, which is fire, the New York State Volunteer Fire Department Association, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Parks and Rec, and Department of Homeland Security to combine and coordinate services and plan effective classes. So we're already having these meetings monthly to set up our curriculums. We plan to deliver skill building classes regarding stress management, healthy response to trauma, healthy lifestyles, nutrition, sustaining healthy relationships, financial security, and retirement planning, and others. That is the rendition from the architects of what that building will look like. To the right is an assembly hall that will house 300 people. To the left is the kitchen and administrative offices, and it will be open all year. It will be heated and cooled all year, and it will have state-of-the-art video and audio services inside it, so that even if a presenter is not able to be there, they'll be able to present via Zoom, WebEx, whatever. So that's what we're doing. Again, I've been involved in this for about a year and a half. It's something that's near and dear to my heart because I've lost too many in my former career at Corning. And here, I've lost too many good people just to the job because of frustration, anger, and poor choices that I believe were avoidable. And you've all heard me say this before, but frustrated law enforcement officers make bad decisions. So we need to not let them get to that place of frustration. That's when bad things happen. That's when the big lawsuits come. So what we're doing is, as a state, we're trying to be leaders in this and provide a place that any first responder can go to and unplug, get the training and skill building they need, and come back stronger than they were. That's what we're building. And next year, I'm going to be the chair of the Institute and still the chair of the training aspect of this. So I'll be very involved in it. So any questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't have too many questions here, Sheriff, but I want to take just a moment to congratulate you and the Ulster County Sheriff Figueroa on a job well done.
Thank you.
you know, too often, well, not enough. We don't do enough to help with suicide prevention. As many as most of you know, I lost my son to suicide almost 4 years ago. So I currently sit on the governor's task force for suicide prevention. And we've talked about some high-risk groups. Law enforcement's definitely, and first responders are up there. They're a high-risk group.
Almost 2 to 1.
Yeah.
Almost it, 2 to 1 compared to the normal.
You know, in our whole year, the past year, we've tried to come out. We're doing our recommendations at our next meeting in April. But I do want to share this with my fellow task force members.
Please
I think it's a great step. When I hear you say that this is the first of its kind on the East Coast, did I hear something like
that? Yeah, the closest one is in Maryland.
Yeah,
that's the next closest one.
And for you to step up to the plate and actually do something for your fellow colleagues and your fellow officers, I can't imagine some of the things you deal with and go through. And then when I read some of the reasoning behind this to unplug and reset, I think that says it the best. You know, to get their emotions, let's see what they're at. Let's get them set. Up there, it did say that you're going to communicate and let us know where we can make donations. Am I correct?
Yep. Once we hit the non-quiet phase, I'll be pushing that out.
I know Jeff knows where this place is. Where's Ricalto's?
It's right in Hornell.
Hornell?
Not North Hornell, yep.
Simmons Rock.
Italian restaurant?
Yes.
All right.
There you go, huh?
Thank you.
It used to be the Club 57, if you knew where that was.
It's on Seneca Road.
Yeah, it's right on Seneca Road.
Well, I just want to I want to congratulate you and everyone involved. This is a big step. And, you know, for Steuben County to step up and say, hey, we've got our sheriff department doing something like this, I think it's big. I think it's really big. So
I'll be there March 12th at the Mental Health First or the Mental Health Support Day at the Capitol. I'm going to be there and probably testifying about this.
Oh, yeah.
The New York State Assembly.
At a public hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't the public hearings over, though? Didn't they finish them?
This is for some of the, it's a day for folks to come and share. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, out good. In the, that's good
out
stuff.
Front. Yeah. Well, thank you. And Kenzie's going with me, too.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
And I testified 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
At the public hearing, the joint sessions.
We've had two employees that attempted suicide and one that completed suicide since I've been here.
Well, you're making a difference. You'll never know the lives you save because
it's true.
They will unplug and reset, as you put it. But I assure you, you're going to be saving lives with this. So thank you.
I'd like to say thank you too. And one thing that I don't know how you could add to that or something. I see Kristen in the back from the towing company.
Yep.
I've had a couple of buddies that were tow truck drivers that ended up on those scenes too.
Yep.
I don't know if they're considered first responders, but that's
to me, they are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's just, you know, when they're seeing some of that firsthand too, you know, some of those drivers,
they see some nasty stuff.
They're going home seeing some stuff too. So,
and we've talked about that in our committee meetings that the first, the ones that are always forgotten are the dispatchers because they're on the phone with them and their heart's breaking.
Yes.
And then you've got the tow drivers, even the ADAs that prosecute these have to see how, you know, the horrible scene. So it's open to anybody that needs treatment in regards to a first responder activity.
Incident.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We're not going by any definitions. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Any other questions?
I have one related to the New York State Department of Corrections issues that are going on. Were we contacted by the state about capacity at our jail to handle state?
So they have that. They know what our capacity is and they know how many beds are full every day. It's a daily report that they have. So they know that. We had a big discussion last week on the sheriff's call. Every week we have a conference call with all sheriffs. And that was a big discussion last week. I think we all know that the governor's going to try and push those down to us, some of the inmates. And obviously none of us want that. The other side of that is we've got state ready inmates that aren't going to the state that we're continuing to house and pay for, along with parole violators that aren't going to the state that we continue to house and pay for. So there's two sides of that equation. Monroe County feels that within 12 weeks, there'll be over capacity if this continues with just state readies. Because they sentence so many more than we do each week. So, yeah, there has been talk. The governor's office did reach out and wanted to contract with the sheriffs. We said no, that we stand with the correction officers, and I think we'll continue to do that. But once they start passing legislation, you know, we're going to be stuck. Last thing I saw was that I think 12,000 didn't go back to work.
And I know we're already short-staffed in the jail, but as our numbers go up, that makes us even shorter. So,
well, and that's something that I think we need to have a discussion about is we have the opportunity right now to probably hire some state folks, but we're one of three counties in the state that has a 30-year retirement. So that would be a discussion for, I'll send out an email on that.
Yeah, we're planning on.
I saw Homer's that one.
From our end, we're planning a discussion end of the month.
Good, good.
So the state inmates, we don't get a reimbursement like the federal ones.
That's what they're trying to negotiate. Because by law right now, we can't hold sentenced felons unless it's for 1 year. Anything over a year, we can't hold them by law.
Right.
So they would have to change the corrections law. And I kind of predicted this back in bail reform days. This is what California did, is they did bail reform and then they shoved their low level felons back to the counties. So this is bad. It's very possible that they're going to just quit taking or start shoving back. And we'll have to see where that goes. But they have reached out to the Sheriff's Association. And I talked to Senator O'Meara about it Friday night briefly, and he has heard talk of that nature. So my heart breaks for those COs that are out there in 10-degree weather standing on their principles.
Thank you very much, Sheriff, for the update. And if there's anything that we need to do, we did the memorialization, but
I saw that.
If there's anything we can do, let us know.
Yep. I thought that was excellent. Getting back from it.
All right. Brooks or Noel?
Hey, Chair. Yep. Is there anyone that can get a copy of that?
Yeah.
Can you email them?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
Before I start, I'd like to say a thank you to the sheriff, to our county attorney, and to Tim Marshall. Last week, we conducted a hearing on a discovery issue about how the 911 system interplays with the sheriff's office and my office. I won't try to describe the niceties of it to you, but it was an important hearing on a relatively novel discovery issue. They all three provided some really critical testimony. We won the hearing. It actually sets a statewide precedent. It was in Irwin Town Court, but it's the first decision of its kind in New York State. So, and we actually won a good decision in discovery, which is hard fought these days. So I want to thank them all for their professionalism and their testimony in front of the Irwin Town Court and making something good happen for the whole state here in Steuben County. With that, for this particular application, I am here. Well, it's entirely your fault that I'm here. This deals with our traffic diversion program. I had an individual who was willing to do the job I'm trying to replace with this funding, for some unknown reason, largely, I guess, a dedication to the office, law enforcement, our local communities, and you guys hired him as county attorney, so I don't have him anymore. But the job still has to get done. And I have right now two openings in the office for part-time ADAs and no bites on those. And those are for line prosecutors who'll be handling town courts and misdemeanors and discovery and things like that. I have to fill those first before I can even think about filling this spot. Finding somebody who will do this for what Tim was willing to do it for and give up the possibility of assigned counsel work is, I think, absolutely impossible. Maybe Tim can speak to that. I'm not sure why he was doing it, but I thank him for his service. So the job has to get done, and I've got to get the work done somehow and be paid by somebody. So what I had talked to Nate, and I think Nate through Jack about, was the idea of paying some of my people to do it. I think we were paying Tim somewhere around $35,000 a year in a part-time, less than part-time ADA position to do it, and that came with benefits. What I am proposing, we've talked to him about the hours he was putting in. What I am proposing to do is set aside $500 a week, which comes out to $26,000 a year. So we're saving both benefits at about $10,000. And again, this is money that's coming out of traffic diversion. So it's not out of the county budget. It is what we're doing is creating more revenue that will go back into the system for either grants or disperse to be dispersed to our localities. Again, pay our folks, pay people, my people, $500 a week to do these jobs. And the job includes screening all the diversion tickets. There are offers that go with that for tickets that don't make it into diversion, handling discovery on the higher end traffic tickets that we're going to try, then trying some of those cases. So the work simply has to get done. We're figuring it's between 10 and 12 hours a week to do that. So what I'm proposing is to put that $500 aside. I would pay one person per week with that money, and we'll be cognizant of making sure that we don't outweigh somebody's salary or cross salary grid lines with that process. I'm not sure Nate really has figured out how we can do that yet with an overtime system. I know that's kind of in flux, but it is something I simply can't ask my folks to do more work and not get paid for it. We are wrung out. I will be coming back before you at some point with some staffing requests when I can really break down our numbers. But we're in a place right now where people are already grumbling over the last two or three years. I've lost three ADAs to workload and outside compensation issues. As we have pushed Tim's workload off to other ADAs, I'm already getting some rumbling, and they all know they can walk outside and make $158 an hour as assigned counsel. So I know we can't pay our folks overtime, nor am I asking. The hourly rate associated here is about what we pay a part-time ADA. So that's the nature of the request.
Everyone's questions or Jack, you have
the $500 stipend, we'll call it whatever you want to call it.
I think they don't want to call it a stipend. We that's a dirty word here. So yeah, we've been through that before.
Would it just be on one single person, or would it bounce around to different ones?
It'll bounce around to different people within the office. Some depends on the workload. I mean, I may have guys who want to volunteer to work a bunch of hours, but they're busy with a trial or something else. We also don't want to end up, with somebody taking that $26,000, wanting to do it full time and having them mess up the salary grid or create some of those issues. So it will move around among people in the office. I think there are three or four right now who are likely candidates, but it may go across more folks if they don't have to staff those.
And at the time that you are able to hire someone to fill the spot, that program stops.
Yes, if I can, or if traffic diversion stops. I mean, if this is a completely traffic diversion funded program. So if I get somebody who wants to volunteers and says, you know what, I want the Tim Rozelle job. Again, first I'll have a mental health evaluation done, and then I will, and then I'll hire him to do this job and do that without question. I'm just not finding anybody. I'm not finding anybody for my other part-time jobs either at this stage, because unlike the public defenders group, my folks have to give up the assigned counsel piece to do those jobs.
I guess because additional money for additional work, it's a correlation thing. I mean, we all got sold on this extra $5,000 for all of them years ago, and that just became part of their base. This one isn't going to be part of their base because it's temporary.
No, this is not. That's why it's not assigned to one person. And I don't want to, the $5,000 is not part of anybody's base anymore. That whole crew has left the office, and nobody is compensated above that anymore. They're all paid based upon experience and the salary grid process.
That was for Cap Court, right?
That was for Cap Court. And again, that was when we first started it. That's been absorbed. And I think none of those ADAs who benefited from that are here anymore. And when I rehired new people, it was not part of their base. They were set as part of it became part of their workload, but not part of their base. So they came in knowing that they were going to have to give up weekends and a couple nights a week to do this stuff. So nobody came in thinking they were going to have to do traffic trials all over the place or traffic discovery or these things.
So what happens if we don't do this?
I don't know. I will continue to try to do the program, but I may have to just abandon traffic at some point. That's my reality. Cause I know, like I said, I'm already hearing rumbling from the ADAs I've asked to do the discovery piece. And I know there are some who are already at their end and they can go do other things and make more money. So it's one of those things. If I start looking like I'm going to lose people, that I'm going to have to walk away from diversion or walk away from some of the traffic stuff. That's, but I already had, you know, our lives have changed a lot in the DA's office the last couple of years. We were designed to handle 3 full-time county court judges. Right now we're handling 5 because they've been sending down 2 Supreme Court judges, Judge Cook and Judge Moran, to handle additional county cases. So we've, that's increased our workload, as far as time, court appearances, and that kind of thing. We don't have additional capacity to give at this point. And I don't have additional people to hire. I've got some openings, but they're just, we're advertising with all the law schools. We've used that, the process, to bring, you know, Dallas in, hire law students and do some of that stuff. But that's a, it's a long wait for a fix when you hire somebody as a second year law student. So I don't have another way to get this done other than to ask my people to do it. And if I ask them to do it, I can't keep asking for more without paying them something more. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, they're seeing in the public defender's office case caps where, you know, they hit a magic number of cases and take no more cases for the year. I don't have that luxury. You know, we do have, well, I won't go into some of the other stuff that's floating around out there, but for this, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I want to keep doing traffic. It's important. Traffic safety is important. But as far as the hierarchy of cases, felonies have to come first, and then misdemeanors, and then traffic stuff. That's the way the law sets them out, and that's the priorities. So if I don't have somebody available, or I don't have time to do traffic discovery, then those tickets are going to get dismissed. And the problem is, if they get dismissed, then there are a number of attorneys who do traffic stuff. They'll find that out, and they will start perpetually asking for discovery. And I'll have to do discovery on 36,000 traffic tickets every year, which I cannot do. So having the credibility to say, if you ask for a discovery on your 105 mile an hour ticket, and somebody to walk up and do the discovery and then try the case, that stops other folks from doing it. So, and if I lose that credibility, then they'll all be asking for it, and the exception will be the rule.
And Brooks is 100% right, coming from a family that's got 3 local village and town attorney or judges. When one attorney finds that they can ask for a certain question and not get it, that floods everybody's asking for that same question. So that last statement, I would say I agree 100% when they start asking for something. Nate, do you have any legal side of paying? Or is Tim going to be here at 9 o'clock at night making the $500?
Well, that's possible. No, I don't necessarily have an opinion either way. I mean, you know, Brooks gave you the reasoning behind it. He's right. We're still working through Novotime and Munis to figure out how we would actually accomplish this. You know, we'll still keep working on it should you folks approve it.
Yeah, the one thing, at least from my perspective, that we have to navigate is management is exempt for overtime purposes. So we have to make it very clear that this is not overtime, that it's additional work outside of their 37 and a half or 40 hours, whatever the case may be. We need to make it very clear that it's separate from that, but that it's not.
Sure sounds like overtime to me, the way you explained it.
But it's, we can't have it be over. And that's the chance. Yeah. We can't have it be overtime, because that opens the floodgates for everything.
And the rate is not an overtime rate. It's consistent with what we pay our people. Yeah. So
I'm not asking
to pay time and a half to do this.
That's my question with it too, is the overtime piece. You know, if you make it, it's almost looks like they're doing an additional job, then, you know, they're getting paid for a second job.
Well, and that's something that, you know, I think trying to still navigate, because, you know, from a paperwork standpoint and a paper trail standpoint, do we have it as, there has to be something, I think, to make it clear that it's not additional duties assigned, where they could say, well, I should be making my overtime rate. We just have to make sure that we thread that needle.
Go ahead, Kelly.
In the payroll system, you might not know this answer, do we actually put in their hours in order to generate their pay?
That's the challenge with management exempt, is when any of us who are management exempt punch, you know, clock in.
Yes.
Unless you submit leave, you are punched for 7.5 or 8 hours, depending upon if you're 37 and a half or 40. So that's the challenge that we have to try to figure out, is because we always call it one punchers, because it is management exempt. You might work 7.5 hours, you might work 10 hours. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do. There isn't, everyone does eventually have an hourly rate that is calculated. But for management, it's just, you know, your weekly rate is your salary divided by 37 and a half.
Would everyone in your office be allowed to sign up for this extra work?
At my discretion. I mean, if somebody's not working up to par in their job, then I'm not going to give it to them. If they aren't able to do the discovery piece, they need to be able to do the trial piece, and they're not going to be. So I will be, I'll be the one deciding who is able to sign up based upon performance and based upon their workload. If somebody's got a major trial coming up, but they want to make an extra $500, I know how much time it takes to prep for a raid trial or something like that. And I'm not going to give it to them during that time frame. So it will be a decision that I'll make, but people can volunteer for it and then we'll assign it. Or maybe how many assignments they get will depend upon the quality of the work they do and those things, just like everything else in the office.
Have you had any luck with your office manager? Are we still budgeted for an office manager for Brooks, and that position doesn't have anybody in it? Is that right?
Oh, it does. We have a part-time person in that position right now.
Okay.
We hired the former DSS commissioner, Edna, from Allegheny County. Retired and is doing that position for us. So she is there.
Okay. She couldn't help you with those assignments?
I guess she could, but I mean, that's a function of really that's an attorney management thing more than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with paying people because it's almost like a second job. You know, I mean, this is like a different thing than a normal attorney. It's like a second job. It's like you could argue it's not really overtime for their normal job because it's not in court work, but I just want to make sure we don't open that can of worms with overtime. That's my only concern.
And I don't intend to do this if an ADA leaves. I mean, that's something we deal with, is we suck up that extra work among the office. Right. This is a static set of we know what this is going to be every single week. Have to get done, and it's also paid outside of it. This is a very specific task. I wouldn't ask to do this if I was down two part-time ADA. Or if I was down a full-time ADA, under those circumstances, people just do more until we hire somebody.
So do you think, this, I guess, is a question for Jack and Nate, but do you think it would be cleaner if this committee was to approve this, to make it like we approve this for 6 months to relook at it to see if we have hired somebody? Would that make it easier on your end as far as paying it, if it actually had a time frame to relook at it, or
part-time temporary?
It's like a temporary. Right?
Yeah. That's honestly a way that we might be able to do it. I heard them both say temporary, part-time. We might, from a paperwork standpoint, be able to appoint these individuals as a temporary, part-time at that hourly pay rate in addition.
And that's sort of how we created this position. We created a part-time temporary position. We tested over it for 6 or 8 months when it became clear that it was necessary and was doing something. It was positive for the office. That's what we created.
So,
because that's really what we're doing, is we're making this part time, and then, like Brooke says, hopefully somebody will say, "Hey, I want that job," and then they have the job. If they do,
so what I'd suggest, because he has money in his budget for this, technically it doesn't require this committee's approval. It's good that you're having this discussion, because I think your feedback, number one, guides Brooks and Nate and I. Admin meets next week. I think between now and admin, we should be able to work together to figure out, and technically it would have to go to admin anyhow,
right?
Because it'd be a change in salary, and that way between now and then, I think for admin we can have something. But want your feedback, because if admin approves it but you as public safety don't want it, then we're in a conundrum. But if the general sense is, if we can find a way to do this without opening the overtime can of worms, then I think within the next week we'll be able to figure out a solution.
What's the committee think? I mean, what's the general sense?
I'm fine with it. I know we make very good money on the diversion program. So, I mean, it can certainly be paid for by that, as long as it is temporary. And as long as we associate the additional money paid to additional work, because I don't want to get in down the rabbit hole where once that's over with, the people still expect the additional money.
That's word for word my concern too. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, the other thing that we should be considering is that we have stated in our mission statement how important our employees are to us. And this is a statement to them that says, when you go above and beyond and take on these extra duties, we recognize it and we're willing to compensate you for it. And so it's important for us to do that.
I would just one thing to your point, Scott, is by not giving it to one person or not giving it to everybody universally, I think there is no expectation. You may get, you know, 2 weeks this month. You may not get any for 3 or 4 months after that.
Yeah. I think going back to what Jack just said about the administration committee, because it's a change in salary, it's actually not a change in salary. It's additional work that's being assigned for additional money.
Correct. It would be, an ancillary position, quote unquote. And I think that's the way to approach it, because there are plenty of management employees that, you know, do put in 50 hours a week, you know, especially like when Brooke said, when there's vacancies in departments. I mean, Chris ran planning for a year, you know, that you just pick up the slack.
Yeah.
We just have to really keep that sharp line between the extraordinary times where it is over 40 and additional specific duties for a program like this case.
Yeah, because this isn't just, you know, 10 extra felony cases that they got to work harder. This is
this would be something which is sort of measurable per week. I mean, you'll have it for a week and you're on call to do this for that week. I mean, you know, the reality is you might get lucky and have a slow week. You might not have to do any discovery that week. You might get hammered and have to do 10 discovery cases. That's just the way it is. So you're signing up for a 1 week block of this, reassigned each week through the process. So.
All right.
Of both screening and then the legal work that goes with it for discovery.
All right. So, I mean, I guess we don't need to vote on anything of what Jack's saying. It's mainly just getting our questions answered.
Or, I'm sorry, Jack, do we need to vote if it's an ancillary position, or should we
prophylactically vote? If everyone's okay, I think admin is the action. So I think getting the sense of this committee that they're okay with the concept if we can find the way to make it work, and then admin would have the formal
okay
stamp.
Right. So after all this, you still have to spell it the Gary Swackhammer. Sorry.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that opportunity. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. Good
morning.
A couple items for you this morning. Renewal of a contract with OCV. This is our Ready Stuben app. This is, I believe, the last year or fourth year in a 5-year contract with OCV for our Ready Stuben app. This is paid for out of Homeland Security money, $5,995.
Motion, Potter.
Second, Tobia.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Are there any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Renewal of our medical director's contract. Our medical director, Dr. Kellogg, was here this morning. He stepped out. We had a 1-year contract with him, and we'd like to renew that. The contract is written for 4 renewals of 1-year agreements, and that's $18,000 for the year annual.
No motion.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Are there any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All right. Going to let Mr. Ferenz handle the generator award.
Morning.
Morning.
You may recall last meeting or the meeting before, we asked for permission to go to bid for installation of a generator at the Mount Washington Tower site and the Cohocton Tower site. We received those bids back from 3 bidders. Low bid was from Integrated Power Supplies International for $42,178. This includes the installation of the pad that the generator goes on and all the associated electrical work that's required in transfer switch installations. So,
and that's total for the 2, not per generator?
Yes, for the 2, yes.
How are they fueled?
Those are propane.
Propane?
Yep.
Paid for out of what?
Homeland Security, sorry.
Okay, yeah. I'll move it.
Right. We have a motion. Do we
have second?
We have a motion and a second. Is there any other questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All right. At the last meeting, you had asked for some information in regards to our revenue for our EMS program, so I'll let Brandon cover that.
Good morning again. In 2024, our revenue was just shy of $40,000, $39,590. Keep in mind that for that we only started service as of July 2nd. And within that roughly 6 month period, many of the contracts were not formalized. We also didn't have Medicare and Medicaid in place yet. We knew that those would take some months to fully come about and contracts to be formalized. Also, Excellus was not formalized at that time either. So that explains kind of that revenue stream. In January of 2025 alone, we were just below 19,000. $18,638.94 was our total in revenue for January of 2025. And I didn't have a chance to get to February just yet. So some response numbers in case this group would like to hear that. 2024, we did a total of 626 responses across two fly cars and an ambulance. Some rough numbers, January in 2025, 110 calls for service, and February, a little bit shorter of a month, 97 calls for service in 2025. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate those numbers.
We, budget-wise, we were very conservative on revenue estimates, right, for this year?
250.
Okay. So given that run rate of 19 for January, that would be nice to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably even going to be higher than that once they get the bugs worked out. You're still working.
Correct. On. Yeah. Like I said, again, a lot of it was insurances weren't even fully in place. Providers learning how to document and you know, put the proper stuff in. We've done a really great job of having our providers simply attach things like the face sheet to the chart. By attaching the face sheet, our insurance company is able to then generate, you know, those charges. But that was a little bit touch and go the first few months as people kind of learned what the ebb and flow of charting was all about.
And we'll lag, especially with Medicare, Medicaid.
Correct.
It historically lags in revenue for all the departments that you bill at.
So the revenue, the 19 you refer to as January, is that billings or is that receipts?
That's receivable. Yeah,
that is receipts.
Yep.
Which is good because the actual, the actual what we're owed is going to be higher. So
yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Kelly.
How are we doing as far as budgeting the expense side? Are we going to be needing more people? Did we budget properly for what we're going to need, what we're going to use?
Yeah, we budgeted properly, and that's kind of the next section in terms of the position creation.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough flex to be able to absorb the things that we're proposing, and that certainly that we're already doing, but we're running into that temporary part-time issue that we talked about. But we increased, Brandon's salary was already baked in, but he was the only one. We increased salary and fringe to $1.5 million. So everything that we're proposing today for position creation definitely have enough in expense side.
Are you seeing, as we get our feet under us and we get this service up to date, that how much do you see the program growing over the next couple of years?
It is going to grow exponentially. I think it will grow as much as we are able to put services in place.
Okay. That would be my thought as well.
For example, I mean, just think about 626 calls in 2024. That's 626 calls that either may not have been answered or been answered in a very long time period.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact in the South and the Woodhull area has been tremendous.
If you put the conversations we had earlier an hour ago, when we have a deputy doing CPR for 50 minutes, you know, that's telling me I'm sure they called an ambulance before they started.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yep. And they wouldn't have still been doing that if the ambulance was there, So it's like, that's 600 calls and they're still doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that this is, you know, it's a need. There's nothing we can do about it.
The other thing, not to go off on a tangent, but this is to say that what we're requesting today in the next section, what Brandon has reported on, is what you folks have discussed over the last number of years to put in place with a couple tweaks in terms of expansion of hours in the Woodhull area. But other than that, it's what you've already discussed. As the year goes on, and certainly into next year and beyond, we're going to have to come back to you. And I don't know if you want to do a special meeting, Jeff, or however you want to handle it, but have more in-depth discussion about the evolution, because the other things that we're hearing from the hospital systems are transfers.
interfacility transfers, which we talked about this a long time ago, that we were going to be in the filling the gaps mode, not transfers. But there is a potential to capture a significant fill a need, because right. I've heard multiple times from Ira Davenport and from St. James that transfers are needed. And that's also really good revenue for us. So we're going to be approaching a point. We had this discussion multiple times already this year with these folks, that we're going to have to frame out, okay, if we add X in terms of staff, here's how many transfers we think we could take in a month. Here's the potential revenue. So it's going to be an evolution, but at all steps, we're going to be coming back to you for guidance. Do you want to expand staff to be able to pick up more transfers, or do you want to continue with filling, just focusing on filling the gap? So, yeah, it's going to be pretty complex and a lot of discussion on your part, but I think from the feedback that I've heard from practitioners, from other folks, you know, from doctor's offices and the hospitals, is that this kind of slowly phasing this in has been the good approach, so that we're not overbuilding a system that is too big, or saying this is all we're doing, this is, and have it be too small, that we're gradually increasing.
I remember during the year worth of meetings that Mr. Malter had on this, transfers with a lot of the volunteer agencies was getting to be the issue, because the 70-year-old volunteers didn't want to spend an entire day on the road doing a transfer to Rochester or wherever. So,
well, the one thing that that's transfer,
a revenue potential is a good idea.
You know? Yeah, it's really good revenue.
Yeah,
it's how Livingston and other counties that are more years into this than us help pay for the program by trying to maximize those.
Because mm-hmm. Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but when an ambulance goes out on scene, if they don't actually haul a person, they don't get paid. Where the transfer, you're guaranteed you're picking up at A and dropping at B. So you're guaranteed mm-hmm. if that ambulance is running, it's getting paid.
Absolutely. You're correct. There is legislation that I don't believe has passed yet that would allow for on scene billing without transport. But I don't believe that legislation has passed the state legislature yet. So, you know, for instance, you have an individual, you know, who has a diabetic emergency, you go, you provide some treatment on the scene, they refuse transport because they're feeling better. You know, you could bill for those services, but that's not available to us right now.
And I've seen that several times. You know, somebody falls down, somebody calls 911 because they think that they're hurt and they're fine. All right. Thank you very much, guys. Go ahead, Wednesday.
I think one of the things when we set this up, we had asked for reports to be given to us periodically on these numbers and revenues when they did start to come in. I'd still like to see that happen, not once a month like it was, but maybe quarterly or three times a year.
Yeah, however you'd like it. On your legislator's portal, you'll have access to, you have access to Tim's reports. We could probably pretty easily just add the monthly numbers to that so that you have real-time access, and then maybe do a periodic review.
What's a legislator's portal?
Oh, I was going to ask the same thing. I was going
to
say,
I mean, Amanda always refers to it in emails about the agenda has been placed out here, or you're like, and.
Don't you have a link on your tablet?
Yeah.
How long have you been a legislator?
Well, this isn't their tablet. This is my tablet.
I don't.
We will resend it. So
okay.
That's where all your monthly reports and things like that live.
No.
Okay.
So Scott and I want a training morning for that.
your continuing education could be in my office when we're done here, if you all want. Right.
That's all I have besides the next section, which we'll bring Nate up for, unless there's other questions.
While Nate's walking over there, I just want to tell everyone too, this is, you know, it's part of public safety. Judy's office has put together something that you can tell your residents, is you guys can put, I did it very fast, but it's something where you can put your information and see if anybody's trying to do anything with the deeds of property that you own. So you'll get a notification if anything comes up with a deed that's in your name.
I did it too.
Because people are basically trying to steal people's land by filing false statements and it happened in Campbell. And then somebody actually put the land up for sale. A neighbor called about buying the land. He's like, I'm not selling my land. And they're like, well, it's up for sale. So it was a can of worms, but it's a thing that the county clerk's office has put together that you can file all your parcel numbers. And if anybody's trying to do anything, you'll get that email or text message, just like you get on your cell phone. Is this you trying to do it? I don't have any other information. Judy might be able to tell us, but it's something you guys can definitely check into if anybody's interested. Cause.
And Eddie posted it on our Facebook last week. So that's probably the easiest way for you to
probably remember. On the portal too, right?
All right, go ahead, Tim.
Did Mr. Potter had a question?
Yes. And some of this probably pending the approval of these additional EMT positions and paramedics. I know you're looking at expanding the hours at Woodhull and probably some of the other outstations to like 12 hours shifts and so forth. And if I'm correct, I saw something for they're looking to expand that to 24 hours at some point.
Yeah, so Brandon had a meeting with Woodhull a couple of weeks ago. I think right now for the initial part, I think what we're looking at is expanding the Woodhull contract to 7 days a week, 12 hours a day to cover the weekends. And then at the time that contract expires at the end of June, we'll look at renegotiating that contract for the potential to go 24/7 at the Woodhull site.
Yeah. And in my discussion, because we met essentially about this and others, because we're hearing from, you know, municipalities, especially in your area, that I think we need more time. I think expanding, we have the data to justify expanding to the 7/12s. We need more data to see is staffing that 24/7, you know, certainly one call can make a all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what does the call data look like? So that we can bring it back to you, because that is a pretty significant change of the initial staffing plan.
Yes, yes. So to go to the 7/12s, when do you anticipate that happening?
Upon if you approve these positions and it has to go to the full board and everything, upon this. The numbers that you see here in terms of the full-time equivalents that we're requesting to create permanent is based on 7/12s over there. So as soon as they can staff up.
Okay. It's going to take a few months then.
Cause it won't be formal until the end of this month. Then Brandon's going to do, his recruitment, Brandon, Tim and Kenny, they've already advised us that they've been talking to the folks that we have as temporary part-timers to see who's interested in coming over. So I think it'll actually be quicker than most other positions that you folks create that take multiple months, but it will be months, not weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing we'll have to do is just reissue the contract to go from, 5 days a week, 12 hours a day to 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. That would just be an amendment to the contract.
Very good. That's something that's definitely needed.
I mean, if you want action on that now, we could work on that. Do we need action on it?
I'd recommend holding on that. I'd recommend, and again, you're yet to discuss it, the personnel items here and then work on that behind the scenes is what I'd recommend, because I think we're a little too early in my opinion.
Have the bodies before you can.
Yep.
Agreed. Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Nate. Even though I think we've already.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to have to do too much here.
If Brenda was here, she'd be telling us to read them all together.
And I was going to say, let's talk about all the EMT ones together, I think, because it all goes hand in hand. As we've said here, we've been talking about this for quite a while. We've had folks in these temporary positions for a while to look at the numbers we needed, and we've come up with that. And, we're looking at creating 8 full-time EMTs, 8 part-time EMTs, 4 full-time paramedics, and 4 part-time paramedics.
It it probably would be good, because I don't think we've discussed it with this body. It'd probably be good for Brandon or Tim to talk about shifts and what that looks like, how you plan on running those shifts, just because I don't think they've heard it yet. And if these are created, they'll start hearing it out there.
So just to piggyback on what we were just talking about, Woodhall. So part of the justification for these positions would be, like we discussed, moving Woodhall initially to a 7 day a week, 12 hour shift, with that possibility, if the numbers and everything else should warrant it, moving Woodhall out to 24/7. Hammondsport
still remaining probably at a 12-hour
right, yeah, with 12-hour rotations. We're looking at Hammondsport as a 24/7 operation, with staffing, the employees would work a 24-hour shift at a time, have 3 days off, and then come back. So they call that a 1-on-3-off or 24 and 72. I know hearing 24 hours on a shift seems long, but it's kind of an industry standard for a lot of folks. They actually prefer to work 24 hours at a time if they can, and then have 3 days off. The paramedic positions would also be 24 hours on, 72 hours off. The paramedics have a little more flexibility as to where they can go. So by having 4 full-time and then 4 part-time, we'll be able to kind of keep those paramedics. Whoops, I'm sorry. Keep those paramedics moving and keep them flexible throughout the county.
Are there any questions?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion?
Do we think we're going to end up cannibalizing AMR staffing?
We talked about that. I mean, I think certainly you'll see some movement. I don't think to the point where it should impact service levels. Actually, Brandon and Tim in our meetings have advised that a number of individuals that we'd likely hire are out of county, especially with a 24-hour shift. Mm. We're going to take from other areas, but not like solely from AMR.
Okay. Because, I mean, obviously my concern is AMR covers a good portion of the county already. If we're going to strip from them, then we're just creating a problem and moving it.
That's exactly what we've talked about for the past year, is we can't solve one problem to create another.
Right.
So it's moving slowly. And 18 FTE is significant.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we think that.
Yeah. If you can bring them from out of the county, that's incremental bodies. That's good.
Yeah.
And this same situation could exist with Hornell.
Yeah, with Hornell, I think Hornell's a little bit different because they're firefighter EMTs. Their pay is higher. And they have the same retirement system as us. So I think we have less of a risk in the Hornell area. But it still exists.
Yeah.
Do the part-time positions get benefits?
No. It depends on, that's one of the things that we have to look at with this. It's based on a calculation or a calculus of multiple months or of payroll to see how many hours they average a week. If they average over 20 for a long time, then they would be eligible for benefits. So at the outset, the answer would be no, with the caveat that we'd have to see how it goes.
And just to piggyback on that, we have been in talks with the union about, because this is obviously different shifts than any of our other employees, different, pretty much different everything than the others.
And that's a good point, Nate. As an advisement to you all is that we'd likely for admin be bringing a memorandum of agreement with main unit CSEA, which they have taken these titles, to factor in the fact that their shifts and their work conditions are going to be completely different than anyone else that's under their contract. So eventually, when we've met with the union 3-4 times about this, so that's in the ether as well.
Okay. It seems like if they're going to do a 24-hour shift, they're obviously going to work more than an average of 20 hours a week. That's one shift.
Correct. It very likely would, but a lot of these folks are kind of, my understanding are, once you have your permanent positions, would be filling gaps. So maybe they're not working the shift. Maybe they're covering
part of it.
And right. And that's why it's going to take I think they are more likely than any of your other permanent part-time positions to reach that threshold to qualify. But because they're going to, a lot of their role is going to be filling gaps, we have to get a couple payrolls to really see.
Well, and there also could be discussion with the union through this, getting this MOA, like Jack's talking about, what constitutes part-time and full-time for these folks as well, because the 20 hours that Jack is talking about is what's currently in the contract now. Depending on how we go through this, that may change
and
a little bit,
because that's
that.
Based on either an 8 or a 10-hour workday.
Right,
so
right. So we're not sure exactly where that's going to land yet.
But I think that 20-hour a week is a common threshold for benefits for retirement planning and other places, not just in governmental type work.
Yeah, that Fair Labor Standards 20 hours is the norm. There are exceptions for public safety and these types of things, but yeah, it more to come on that. But I would, to your point, I would think it's more likely for these positions to eventually qualify for benefits as a part-timer.
And we're also looking at some of the part-time employees primarily filling the Woodhull gaps, which is a 12-hour shift. So,
okay. Are there any other questions? We already have a motion and a second.
Are we voting on all the positions?
All but the last ones.
Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Carries.
Okay, and the next one is a request to create an account clerk typist, CSEA grade D. Obviously, there's a lot more paperwork in that department now. And account clerk typist is a direct line of promotion with the clericals that are already there, which makes a line of promotion, makes sense. So we're asking you to create that.
And as I mentioned in my memo to you all of last week, this will help with succession planning in the office too, because you have a critical senior account clerk typist that, when she retires, there's a lot, decades of institutional knowledge that'll be leaving. So if we can have some overlap and fill the duties, it's a win-win.
I'll move it.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait till Swackhammer sees these, you know.
Any other questions?
Jack, nope, I don't think so. Right, Jack has one.
Yeah, you might as well stay up there, Tim, because, and maybe even Brandon.
Sorry, guys, I told you you could leave.
But just wanted to advise you, and I did put it in my memo to you all, that these folks, we have been approached. I had conversations with the mayor of Hornell. We've been approached by the city of Hornell for essentially an intermunicipal agreement for them to operate under our countywide certificate of need to cover other towns, specifically the town of Hartsville. That is one option. Another option would be, and Chris knows the town supervisor over in Hartsville and has had conversations over the last year. Tragically, the former town supervisor passed away last year. Her husband is now town supervisor. So we've been discussing this for a while. Hartsville could get their own certificate of need. And at one point we thought they were in the process of doing it, but now it seems like they're kind of waiting. And then they could contract directly with the city of Hornell and we wouldn't need to be involved. That's one option. The other option is allow the city of Hornell to operate under our certificate of need, but then we'd need direction from you, as I stated in my memo, on, you know, their charging of the town if they're operating under our certificate, to make sure that this doesn't impact either their or our ability to bill patients. So it's a little more complex. So we wanted to put it in front of you. I talked to the mayor and I said that's kind of the next step, is to have this discussion with you all to see, you know, what you would like, how you'd like us to, you know, proceed in the discussions.
I think if they're willing, you know, to cover it, anything they can cover is that much more coverage we have in the county. I think it's just exactly what you said. It's working the bugs out to make sure if they are under us that we can still bill and it doesn't affect us.
Yep. Yeah. And certainly they're obviously a critical partner that, you know, we'd have a heck of a time trying to fill that gap over there. So however you want to handle it, if you want them to be able to operate under us, we can work with Tim and others on, you know, what the details of an agreement and the nuances of that. Or again, I think your other option is to, you know, advise the town that, you know, if they apply for their own CON, then they control their destiny and they can contract directly with Hornell.
I have a question on that, because I know Hornell at one time was charging each town a specific amount to go into that town to begin with. And if they're under our certificate of need, should they still be charging that town, the actual township?
That's the question.
Plus charging the patient, the billing patient? I don't think that's right. If they're under our certificate of need, they should be billing like what the county bills for that and not charge the town extra to go in.
And so that's candidly my concerns, probably not the right word, but question, I guess, is, you know, I understand why Hornell has the structures that they do, because it's taking them out of the city, and, you know, that's not our call. But having them operating under our CON puts us directly in the middle of that hole.
How long would it take the town to get their own?
It's just basically passing a resolution like we did, that then gets filed with the state. It shouldn't take an enormous amount of time.
It would definitely be a lot cleaner, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd probably be cleaner for us not to be in the middle of it.
Yes.
But Hornell's not going out to all these other towns near as much with us going and having our own ambulance out there to help fill in these gaps either.
They still are covering a ton, especially of those towns where they have the contracts with.
Mm-hmm.
What complicates this is Hartsville used to have a contract with Canastillo. Canastillo wasn't coming with the calls, so Hartsville wanted to go with Hornell, but they didn't. That's what started the hold. Should they apply for the CON? Can Hornell operate under ours? I think Hornell certainly can operate under ours, but I think you all, because you're going to get the calls too from the town, need to define if they're operating under ours. Can they, to your point, charge a base amount to a municipality and then bill or not? And this is probably the first of many conversations, because them operating under our CON, I think as time evolves, there might be some strong benefits to that. But right now there's a lot of things to be discussed.
Is it possible to let them operate under our CON and have them go ahead and get their own CON in the meantime, to get coverage? Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, what I think the paperwork would be just about the same, because we'd have to essentially contract with the city of Hornell, come up with an intermunicipal. Actually, it'd be quicker, because you'd need to do an intermunicipal agreement with the city of Hornell, specifying and detailing all these things, where if the town of Hartsville at their March meeting passes a resolution to get their own CON and then contracts with Hornell, they could get that done, in my opinion, quicker than us getting the contracts, because not only would we have to approve it, Hornell City Council would have to approve it. So it'd be, I think from a time frame standpoint, it's assuming Hartsville is willing, and Chris's last conversation, it seemed like they were open to it, right? Yeah, so
yeah, I think that's the cleanest way to go. Is just have them get their own,
especially if they can lean on Chris and Tim, maybe to give them any guidance on how they have to apply for it. That might be their biggest thing, is saying, "Well, okay, we're willing to do it, but how do we?"
Yeah, we actually did provide them with the attorney Hannigan, who we use. Chris had provided Hartsville that, like, here's the attorney who can help you out. And you know, I did reiterate to the mayor leading up to this discussion that Hornell is a critical partner in this, and them being strong to respond in their area, I think, is in all of our interests. So, you know, at least from my perspective, want to partner with them as much as possible. This just gets a little nuanced.
So I think the census is see if they can get their own.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And if we run into bumps in the road along the way, I'll talk to the city of Hornell. We'll talk to Hartsville. If we run into any speed bumps, we'll let you know.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Does anybody have anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Wow, hour and a half.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I know that was the longest time ever took.